Prithvyah on the earth. Saha,
he, Lord Krishna.
Vai, indeed. Guru Param, a great burden. Shapayan,
completely finishing.
Kurunam, of the personalities born in the Kuru dynasty. Andatsamutta Kalinda, by creating enmity between the brothers by disagreement. Yudhi, in the battle of Kurukshetra. Upachambaha,
all the
demoniac
kings.
Drishya, by his glance. Viduya,
cleansing their sinful activities.
Vijayhe,
in victory.
Jayam,
victory.
Udvigosha,
declaring the victory for Arjuna.
Rocha,
giving instructions.
Udavaya,
unto Udava.
Cha,
also.
Param,
transcendental.
Samagat,
returned.
Swadhamma,
to his own place.
Translation.
Thereafter, Lord Sri Krishna created a misunderstanding between family members just to diminish the burden of the world.
Simply by his glance, he annihilated all the demoniac kings on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and declared victory for Arjuna.
Finally, he instructed Uddhava about transcendental life and devotion and then returned to his abode in his original form. As you can repeat.
Thereafter, Lord Sri Krishna created a misunderstanding
between family members
just to diminish the burden of the world.
Simply by his glance.
He annihilated all the demoniac kings
on the battlefield of Kurukshetra
and declared victory for Arjuna.
Finally, he instructed Uddhava
about transcendental life and devotion
and then returned to his abode
in his original form.
So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam.
The mission of Lord Krishna was performed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, for by the Lord's mercy Arjuna was victorious due to being a great devotee, whereas the others were killed simply by the Lord's glance, which cleansed them of all sinful activities and enabled them to attain sarupya.
Finally, Lord Krishna instructed Uddhava about the transcendental life of devotional service, and then in due course of time he returned to his abode.
The Lord's instructions in the form of Bhagavad Gita are full of jnana and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation.
In the human form of life, one must learn these two things, how to become detached from the material world and how to acquire full knowledge in spiritual life.
This is the Lord's mission.
Hrutshanaya sadunam vinashaya chadushkritam.
After executing his complete mission, the Lord returned to his home, Goloka Vrindavan.
So, prithvya savai guru param shapayan kurunam manta samutta kalina yuribu pacham vaha drishya vidua vajaya jayamud vigosha prachodavaya chaparam samagatsva dhamma.
So, Om Ganatimadandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chaksur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So this is leading up to the description in the 10th canto of the Lord's advent, where the 10th canto starts with the description of the earth being overburdened with demoniac kings. And Bhumi gets upset. Bhumi is the personification of the earth, and she gets upset, goes and places a complaint to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma and the demigods, they go to the shore of the ocean of milk, and Lord Brahma gets this particular message from the Supreme Personality of God that you should all appear on this earth, I will be appearing shortly to diminish the burden of the earth. Now, the reason that the earth was overburdened by demons, and these are real demons, not like we have nowadays on the earth planet, you know, the leaders, whatever, like that. They're just confused. I wouldn't say that they're the same, in the same category as the demons that were described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The demons that are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they come from the demoniac planets, and I'm going to describe why they came down to the earth planet. And, you know, they're descendants of Diti or Danu. You know, they're real, like demons. And what we have now are just people who have some demoniac propensities because they have bad association. But for the most part, they're innocent people on the earth planet. I mean, we could make so many claims of conspiracy. It's like every day I get different emails about people talking about this conspiracy, that conspiracy theory. There's something called the HARP conspiracy. You heard that before? Where the Americans have all these different antennas all over the place, you know, change the weather and control people's minds. You know, and recently there was someone who shot up a whole bunch of people in an airport because he was claiming that the army had put a chip in him and was controlling him. So anyway, I don't think there's so many. I mean, there may be conspiracies, but these are tiny little things. But at the time, right before Krishna's appearance, there was major conspiracy. And that major conspiracy was there. Referring back, we can give information about it, referring back to the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we'll tell the story very quickly. So once upon a time, Indra was on his elephant Airavata, and being on his elephant Airavata, he was very proud. Durvasa Muni came, and Durvasa Muni decided just to give Indra his remnant garland. Now, when you get the remnants of a great sage, it's extremely purifying. Just like we love to have the remnants of the deities, or the remnants of Srila Prabhupada, we honor those things. But Indra did not honor the garland of Durvasa Muni, and as a result, he took the garland, threw it down on the ground, and his elephant, Airavata, trampled the garland. And Durvasa Muni got very angry, cursed Indra, cursed all the demigods, because, you know, if someone acts improperly in a village, you know, there's an offense, then the whole village has to suffer. That description is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there's Ramchandra Khan. He offended, of course, Haridas Thakur, offended Lord Nityananda, and as a result, his whole village was devastated. So one has to be very careful of living in a village or community where there's offenses going on, because it just doesn't affect one person, it affects everyone, because other people are not countering. It's not, you may say there's innocent victims, but actually if people don't counter offenses, they're culpable too, especially offenses against the great Vaishnava. So, anyway, so getting back to the point, so the demigods, they became extremely weak, and the demons took over. And then the demigods go to Lord Vishnu, they say to Lord Vishnu, what can we do, Vishnu? And Lord Vishnu says, well, when there's a problem, make a deal with your enemies. And so the deal was that they were supposed to all churn the ocean of milk and come out with something called the Amrit. Amrit means nectar of immortality, that if you drink it, you don't die, at least for a long time. Still, they die at the end of the creation. The demigods, they went to the head of the demons. The head of the demons at that time was Bali Maharaj. And he was the head of the demons for quite a long period of time. So they went to Bali Maharaj and said, Bali Maharaj, let's make a deal. And Bali Maharaj said, it's a good deal. And so the demons and the demigods, they took up this task of churning the milk ocean. Of course, they were using Mount Mandara, which is too heavy for them to bring to the milk ocean. So finally, Garuda had to come and bring Mount Mandara to the milk ocean. But Garuda had to leave immediately thereafter. Does anyone know why Garuda had to leave immediately thereafter?
Because
Vasuki was the churning rod. And so Vasuki wouldn't hang around where Garuda was. So anyway, so the demigods and the demons, they had a discussion. Who's going to take the head? Who's going to take the tail? And it was decided that the demons would take the head because they thought the head was more auspicious than the tail. And the problem is with the snake, the tail is more auspicious, more less inauspicious, let's say, than the head, because the head has a lot of nectar coming out of it, you know, poison. So anyway, so there was the churning of the milk ocean, and several things came out of the milk ocean. Of course, the Lord served as the pivot point, as the in a tortoise incarnation. He also was over on top as a jitta, and pulling, helping to pull too. So the Lord was participating in many different ways in this particular pastime. So churning the milk ocean, several things came out. You know, Lakshmi came out. She chose the Lord, obviously, a jitta. And other things came out, like poison, halahala poison, and Lord Shiva drank the poison and saved the whole universe. And eventually, the nectar came out of the milk ocean, carried by Dhanvantari, the medical incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the demons stole the nectar. So the demons stole the nectar. Demigods were upset. They went to Lord Vishnu again. Lord Vishnu said, I'll take care of it. Lord Vishnu assumed the form of Mohini Murti and bewildered the demons, who asked her to divide the nectar equally. They had great faith in her because she was so beautiful, which is very logical. So they asked her to divide the nectar. She gave the nectar to the demigods. And of course, Rahu, he snuck in there. You know, he had his head cut off. And he got very angry with the sun and the moon, and there's eclipses because of that. So then what happened is the demons got really angry at being cheated by the demigods, so they started with attack the demigods again. And the demons were actually so powerful at that point, still powerful, that the demigods had to go to Lord Vishnu again to ask for help. And so Lord Vishnu comes out and he kills many of the demons, especially Kalanemi and Viprachitti. And they're important demons because later on they became, in Krishna's pastimes, Kamsa and Jarasandha. So you see the whole story is leading into the 10th canto story. So anyway, so Krishna kills the demons as well as killing Bali Maharaj at that point. But Bali Maharaj is very fortunate that he has a great spiritual master. Like if you're going to join the Marines, you should have a spiritual master who can bring you back to life. Right, Sri Arjuna? So, I don't know if anyone in ISKCON is that capable. Anyway, so Shukracharya has this Mritru Sanjeevani. And it's a mantra, actually. It's mantras, different mantras, where you can produce this whatever to bring someone back to life. Actually, Brihaspati's son, Kacha, learned the same mantras. That's a different story we told before. So he gets brought back to life by Shukracharya. Demons become very, very powerful. Actually, before this, there was an interesting demon that was killed. His name was Namuchi. Namuchi, that means not dirty. Anyway, and he had the benediction. Namuchi had the benediction. He couldn't be killed by any, you know, solid weapon. That's pretty good. To get that weapon, you can definitely join the Marines and do pretty well. And so Indra was told by Vishnu that actually if you want to kill him, you have to kill him with something, a weapon that's not solid, so Indra killed him with a foam weapon.
Foam?
Foam, yeah.
Like water?
Like foam, you know, like soap, bubbles. Somehow or other, you know, I don't know how. I mean, soap bubbles haven't hurt me so far in this lifetime. So he killed him with a foam weapon. So you got to learn these weapons if you're going to join the Marines. All these different astras and everything. So anyway, Bali becomes very, very powerful. Extremely powerful. Takes over the whole universe, you know, with the help of his guru, Shukracharya. And the demigods, again, are bereft of their heavenly planets. And so, because they were bereft of the heavenly planets, they start praying, particularly the demigod's mother. Aditi starts praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, help, 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 and the Supreme Lord agrees to become her son. And takes birth as her son. Her son's name is Lord Vamanadeva. Or Vamanadeva. And Vamanadeva gets benedictions from different demigods and different things like that. So he eventually goes to the sacrifice of Bali Maharaj. We're just going very quickly through the story in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He goes to the sacrifice of Bali Maharaj and basically takes the 3 steps of land. 1 step covers the earth, the other step covers the whole universe, kicks the whole universe. And the 3rd step, of course, after Bali Maharaj is arrested, gets put on Bali Maharaj's head. Bali Maharaj gets pushed down to Sutala, the lower planets, and where Lord Vamanadeva becomes the doorkeeper, and some people say guard, to make sure that Bali Maharaj doesn't get out. But later on, Bali Maharaj is going to become the Indra, one of the Indras in the universe. So then the demons get completely defeated by the demigods and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so the demons decide to take birth on the Earth planet. You know, that becomes, I know that Rita Nandamarsh talks about the story. He says that they change the Earth to a Death Star or something like that. He uses that particular Star Wars analogy there. He says that the Earth becomes like a place of demons. So therefore, that's why the Earth is overburdened by the demons, or was overburdened by demons before Krishna's appearance. Now, Krishna has a very interesting plan in order to annihilate these miscreants. Now, there's millions of them. It's not just like 2 or 3. You know, just like there's 33 million demigods, so there must be at least an equal number of demons to counter them. And of course, as we've talked about previously, the demons are necessary. You know, Krishna asks why. Why are there demons? You know, why does Krishna allow Aditi and Danu and others to create these demons? I mean, why doesn't just Krishna have demigods? Well, there's several reasons. The primary reason that Krishna allows these entities to become so powerful is because without them, the demigods would actually be in more Maya than they ordinarily are. Because the demigods are generally Sakama devotees. And when you get Sakama devotees, and this may apply to many of us too, when you get Sakama devotees, when everything goes all right, then you forget God. You know, you may be going to your kirtans, eating prasadam, but you're forgetting the prasadam is Krishna. You know, you're just eating and enjoying, you know, getting the enjoying spirit. It's like you're sitting at the Sunday feast and go, you know, throwing all the food. Oh, this is good. This is really good. Mm-mm. Satisfies my taste buds. But actually, you're forgetting Krishna. Prabhupada even said many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasanna because they get into an enjoying spirit. And so, you know, you're doing your Hare Krishna thing, you're wearing your dhoti, and you're doing all your rituals and genuflecting. I know that's not Hare Krishna. That's a Christian thing. Genuflecting. Anyway. So, but you're not thinking of what you're doing while you're doing it. And you're just enjoying, getting into enjoying spirit. You know, Krishna's given us this nice facility, a nice pavilion out here, nice this, nice this. I have a house at Govardhan. Isn't that nice? I can enjoy And so then Krishna has to come, or Krishna arranges for some opposition, so that you actually go, oh my God, this mature world is not enjoyable. Oh my God, I got hernia. So just when you were thinking everything is going right, got my diet down, exercising every day, you know, then, boom! Hey, Krishna, what are you doing? So all these different obstacles, what we consider to be obstacles, are actually stepping stones on becoming Krishna conscious. You know, whether it's demons, you know, you get accused of something you didn't do, or you get some injury, or you get some old age. Not a lot, but some old age. But you get, when you get these things, you know, you go into debt, whatever. Actually, it's described that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur kept his temples in debt. Why did he keep them in debt? So they'd be in anxiety and they wouldn't be complacent. Right? Complacency is actually counterproductive for developing Krishna consciousness. When everything's going all right and everything's perfect, it's not a good thing for Krishna consciousness, at least for Nevite devotees or devotees who are not pure devotees. So, therefore, Krishna arranges, getting back to the point, Krishna arranges some nice demons, or nice opposition. Now, Prabhupada said, without opposition, where's the chance for glorious victory? You know, there's a challenge. Without challenges, I mean, how do you sharpen your devotional service? I mean, you have to sharpen your knife of devotional service without challenges. Otherwise, you'll never go back to Godhead. So the demigods, so that's his mercy to the demigods. There's opposition. Also, there are plenty of living entities with demoniac propensities who have executed certain austerities and are Vedic. You know, these demons that are being discussed here are definitely, for the most part, Vedic demons. I mean, you don't find non-Vedic demons doing sacrifices like Bali Maharaj did, do you? I mean, do you go to the White House and find, you know, fire sacrifice being performed and Brahmanas being honored? You know, if I was to walk into the White House or, you know, or in the UK, you know, to see Queen Elizabeth, not Queen Elizabeth, she's dead. But anyway, if I see the Queen, would they say, oh, there's a sannyasi, there's a Brahmin? I mean, India had some remnant of that. Even when Prabhupada was on the planet, Prabhupada could go in and see the Prime Minister. And there would be some respect. He had pictures of himself taken with Nehru. So, but nowadays it's not like that, neither in India nor in the West. So these were Vedic demons. I mean, that's why they were so powerful too. Because they had done certain austerities and sacrifices and worshipped their guru like Shukracharya. So they became very powerful as a result of that. They weren't just like the wimpy demons we have. They're not demons, but wimpy, let's say, bewildered souls that we have nowadays. They're just wimps for the most part. So anyway, so they became very powerful. And so that was their desire too. So Krishna was also reciprocating with these living entities' desires. So in order to create this conflagration, which means a fire, in other words, a devastation of all the demons, Krishna made a lot of arrangements. Not only did he appear on this earth planet, but he also had the demigods, of course, appear in the family, different families, or expansions of the demigods, or empowered incarnations of the demigods, like he did before the Ramayana was there, before the fight with Ravana was there. And so he not only had that, but he had certain demigods act in inimical ways to help with this whole procedure. And those two demigods are described in the Mahabharata as, of course, Kali and Dwarpara. You know, the personification of those two ages. You know, we have the Kali, who is the personification of Kali Yuga. He's actually a demigod, according to the Mahabharata. In other words, he has a particular service. I mean, Kali Yuga is great because Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambajet, in spite of being like an ocean of difficulty, there's the great quality simply by chanting Hare Krishna, getting absorbed in the holy names and preaching Krishna consciousness, you can go back to Godhead. I mean, that's pretty cool, isn't it? It's just simply by doing that, purely, of course. So Kali and Dwarpar, you know, the personification of Dwarpar Yuga, and he also has some impiety in his blood. They appeared as Duryodhana and Shakuni. You see that these were the two most instrumental personalities in causing I wouldn't say destruction, but in causing the fighting in the dynasty. You know, the opposition to the Pandavas. These two are extremely important. Without them, you wouldn't have had that fight, right? Without them, the Pandavas, you know, with the other 99 sons of Dhritarashtra, probably they would have made some peace. But Duryodhana and Shakuni was always like mentoring. He was like the guru of Duryodhana. Of course, we say Balaram is Duryodhana's guru, but he was a martial arts guru. So Shakuni was continually mentoring Duryodhana and just encouraging him and pushing him. And Duryodhana did his thing and arranged for all the kings to be assembled in the Battle of Kurukshetra, the demoniac force to be assembled, and to fight with the godly force. Actually, even on Duryodhana's side, there were godly forces. All of Krishna's Narayan army. It's amazing. I mean, these were not like demons. These were not demons. I mean, so there were actually a lot of godly people in the army on Duryodhana's side, which is quite interesting. And I mean, not only them, but the king of Madradesh, he actually was also, and he had been planning to be on the Pandava's side, but he got tricked by Duryodhana because he was received on the way to the Battle of Kurukshetra by Duryodhana's people who were acting as if they were Pandava's people. And he was so pleased by that particular reception, he said, okay, I'll just give you whatever you want. And because of that, they said, well, we want you to fight on our side instead of the Pandava side. So these were Kshatriyas, that's very interesting for you. Kshatriyas, if they made a promise, they actually stuck to their promise. They were very strong with that. You see Arjuna, there's many stories about that. If they made one promise, they were dhritavrata, like Grandfather Bhishma, there's another story, of course, Grandfather Bhishma stuck to his promise even to a fault. But Arjuna stuck to his promises. And the king of Madradesh, he stuck to his promises and he fought on the opposite side from his nephews, which is terrible. You know, Nakula and Sahadeva were his nephews. So he fought on, because Madri, you know, Madri was related to him. So anyway, you had good people on both sides of the Battle of Kurukshetra, which is interesting. And they fought each other, and they were all killed except for a handful of people. And as described here, they all got liberated by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And tomorrow we'll start reading the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's actually about 15 seconds left to class. Yes?
I know, in the 1900s, back in the 1950s and beyond time, when a man had mentioned something or said he was going to do something,
he did it.
It was a man in his word. It was a man in his word. Regardless of what happens around him, he does what he thought said he would do.
Yeah, it's not like that now. Prabhupada was extremely shocked when devotees didn't keep their promises, your initiation promises. When the first devotee, after a while, it was like seen it, been there, done it. But in the beginning, Prabhupada was thinking, you know, these people have made a promise. Why are they not keeping their promises? Okay, on that happy note, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.